this last week, talking about getting ready for back to school. My oldest started first grade this year, and he decided a couple days before school happened, started back up, he decided to have one of his buddies from last year over to kind of get them both in the social mood again. And his buddy came over and he played, and my four-year-old son played with them. And my four-year-old son had something important happen in his mind and heart recently. And as they're playing, I don't know if they're playing Xbox or sitting at the counter eating snacks, but they're playing. And after a while, my four-year-old leaned over to him and he said, "Hey, have you said yes to God yet?" This kid sat there and he finally said, "I don't know what you're talking about." Which got me thinking about our kids, not just my kids, but all of our kids who, as they head back to school, one thing that students do receive a lot of is pushback for what they believe or how they express their faith. And sometimes it's as innocent as that story, where you have different people with different beliefs or different knowledge about God and Jesus, and that kid was not trying to be mean in any way, but he kind of caught my four-year-old off guard, like, "What do you mean you don't know what I'm talking about?" And sometimes it's common for students to receive pushback, whether it's an innocent questioning of, like, "What are you talking about?" Or sometimes it might be teasing, especially in middle school, where that's like boys' default response is you feel nervous, you tease people about whatever, including their faith. And students receive a lot of pushback, and students, I'll say, that's no different from adults. And maybe you might receive it more just because you're in an intense social setting, but even we adults receive pushback at times for what we believe or how we express our faith from our family or from our friends or coworkers. It's a fairly common experience, and to be honest, like, if you're a Jesus follower, it's almost like a guaranteed experience. Like, it's going to be something that you're going to experience. You're going to have some people at some point in time give you a little pushback for what you believe. And parents, I'm one of you parents that want to try to shield my kids from as much pushback as possible. Like, I want them to grow up and to be strong in their faith. But I know, like you know, that no matter how hard we try to be helicopter parents and protect them really well, we're not going to be able to shield them from all the pushback, which means we better be preparing them on how to handle that pushback when it comes. And not only them, but we got to prepare ourselves. Like, we want to be good at managing this pushback when it does happen. And there are some poor ways of responding to pushback that we don't want it for ourselves or our kids. And so just a few poor ways of responding to pushback is when someone pushes or gives us pushback on our faith. We don't want to be someone that deflects the pushback or simply does nothing and tries to change the topic. Like, the Bible teaches that if you don't respond to a fool according to their folly, they're wise in their own eyes, and everyone around them think that they're the smart one in this situation. And if you really believe in God, and you have, like, if you really believe in your faith, like, unless you simply don't care about that other person and their friends, like, you want to be able to respond and respond well to not only help your own mindset be confident in your faith, but also encourage them. But on the flip side, you also don't want to respond by fighting and say, "Well, you think I'm stupid, you're stupid, and what you believe is stupid." And then you just start a dumb argument and fight that is all too common, not just with our friends, but with family members. And you start fighting in a way that doesn't persuade anybody of anything. It simply just hurts relationships. And probably the worst way to respond is to give in and to change your mindset or your beliefs or your actions in order to please people instead of pleasing God. I know my wife, we were wrestling with this week, and my wife shared with me, she said, "Hey, like, when I was younger and there was a time when I questioned my faith the most, it all started with one of her close friends who she trusted. They were talking about the gospel, and her friend just said, to me, it sounds like a fairy tale. To me, it sounds all fake." And it got like, that was a friend she trusted and she liked and she, like, she looked up to. And that friend said that and it really rocked her world. And it, like, it rocked her faith. And like, we don't, like, we want to please God in those situations, which means that if we're going to get good at responding to pushback, we got to prepare ourselves and prepare our kids on how do you manage pushback in a way that's healthy for yourself and healthy for the person in this situation with you. And so, like anything in life, if you want to get good at something, well, find someone else who is good at it and learn from them. And today, that's what we're going to do. We're just going to read a couple stories of some guys that were in situations where they received some pretty intense pushback, and they handled it really well. And those stories are found in the book of Daniel. I think if you have one of the church Bibles, it's on page like 719, Daniel chapter 1, and the rest of you can turn to your phones, or you're welcome to just listen. But Daniel chapter 1 starts up with a scenario where it happened 600 years before Jesus was born, which from our perspective, Jesus was 2,019 years ago, so we're talking about 2,600 years ago, this story in history happened, where the king of Babylon basically conquered a section of Israel, a chunk of Israel, and that's where the story picks up. And in the middle of verse 1, it says, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And verse 3, it says, he ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court or court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. It says at the end of verse 4, the purpose was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service, which all sounds not too bad, but just step back for a minute. There's a couple tricky things about this. One, these kids that they basically get kidnapped, their families were either killed or they're taken from their families to bring in, and with the Israelites, God had given the Israelites, he had asked the Israelites to be his special people. And part of their faith, he asked them to follow some specific dietary restrictions that asked them not to eat certain foods. And if they were to eat certain foods, it had to be prepared in just the right way. And I don't know if it was that or because these foods might have been worshipped or offered as worship to a god, and whoever eats these foods, that god gets the credit for their health. I don't know what the situation was, but for whatever reason, we see that Daniel could not eat this food and drink this wine in good conscience. He couldn't do it. And it says in verse 8, Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, which is basically he decided firmly he was not going to displease God in any way with this. He wasn't going to do it. And so, I love how he responds. He asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. He explained, hey, I believe in God, and God asked me not to do this. Is there any way around this scenario? Which is a pretty bold move for a student to do. Then it said in verse 9 that God caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. That this guy actually felt for Daniel, and he liked Daniel, and he kind of empathized with his tricky situation. But the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. Like, I like you, but I'm not enough to risk my life for you, but I can't. I'm sorry. But Daniel was like so committed. He wasn't going to displease God in this way. He wasn't going to do it. So he got a little creative. He went to the guard who was over he and his buddies. It says, Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief priest had appointed over Daniel and his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He said, hey, please, test your servants for 10 days. I mean, this is a 3-year trial period, a 3-year training. Give me 10-day trials. Give me a 10-day test. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food. And treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So the guard agreed to this, and he tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. Like, they managed the situation really, really well, and it worked out. Do you think God was pleased? You bet he was pleased. Like, these guys worked really hard to obey God. And it says in verse 17, to these four men, young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. Like, God helped them thrive in their school and their studies. And it says, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds, which later he explained was not humanly possible, but God would give him like special insight because God was pleased with how he handled this situation and others. And it said, verse 18, at the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them and found that none were equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service, which is a big honor. And every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found these four were 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters and the whole kingdom. So you look at that situation with that major pushback that they faced, and it's like, man, they managed that really well. So just a few things that they, I feel like they did right that if we and our kids do well, will really help them in their moments of pushback is, right from the get-go, before the pushback got intense, Daniel and his friends, they decided, we can't budge in this area. And they committed themselves now so that they would please God later. So like in your number one tip in your bulletin, if you have it, commit now so that you please God later. Like, a lot of times pushback doesn't just pop up all of a sudden happen. Like, sometimes you can sense it coming and you know that, man, my teacher's going to ask me to do this assignment or whatever that is. And like, I don't feel comfortable doing this. Or like, and before those moments come, decide, like Daniel, that I can't budge in this and I'm going to stay strong. And because if you don't commit now to please God later, you probably won't. Because under pressure, we oftentimes don't make good decisions. We just do whatever is easiest. God, there are major benefits of pleasing God in examples like this. And one being, we saw it in the story where God blesses Daniel and his friends, and he answers their prayers. And that reminds me of James 5:16 that says, the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Like, God likes listening to and answering the prayers of those who work really hard to obey him. So, like, commit to pleasing him. Commit to obeying him. And the other tip that I think we can get from this story is, like, these guys were prepared to answer well. Like, they learned how to answer in a way that was super tactful. And they had their, when they spoke with the guard and the other guy, they were well articulated. They explained their reasoning. They even provide a solution for it so that the guard and the king can accomplish their goal while allowing them to still keep their faith. And because of that, it worked out. And like, we're encouraged in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you for the reason for the hope that you have. So like, be prepared. Be prepared to answer well. And oftentimes when you answer well, you have the opportunity to help the person giving you the pushback. But these guys didn't just answer well. When they answered and they responded, they were super respectful. Like, they asked for permission. And they approached them. And they were nice in a way that the people they were talking to liked them. And they cared about them. And they could empathize with them. And that first same passage in 1 Peter 3:15, it says, be prepared to give an answer. And it says, do this with gentleness and respect. Because as Proverbs would state, a gentle answer turns away wrath. But a harsh answer causes fighting. So like, answer well and answer respectful, and oftentimes you find out that the scenario keeps the peace and everyone's happy. I know it worked for me once in college. There's one weird time in college when it was my senior year, I had just gotten married, and I was wrapping up my classes. My grades mattered to me at the time, and I had one class where a big chunk of my grade was on a paper that I was supposed to write from watching a play. So my wife and I, we got all dressed up, and we were excited to go see a good play, and we went and watched it, and at this play, it didn't take long for the play to get going, that for whatever reason, I felt really uncomfortable. There's some elements in the play that I did not feel like I should support or should be watching. And like I felt like I just felt uncomfortable for a long time, like I felt like God did not want me there for whatever reason. And I remember I looked at my wife and I quickly saw that she felt the same way. It was like a weird situation. And I remember I leaned over to her and I said, "Hey, do you want to bow out?" She's like, "Yeah, let's do that." And so we found a tactful time that wouldn't disrupt anybody. We had found a tactful time to use the restroom, and we bowed out. And it stunk. Like, as we bowed out, all of a sudden I'm like, I got to write a paper on that. And a huge part of my grade is on this paper. And so, like, I remember my paper was due the next class period, and I went to my teacher the next class period, and I said, "My paper is not ready." And it was awkward because secular college teacher that I'm sure did not have the same beliefs. But I just decided, hey, like, I had to explain myself. So I explained myself to her. I said, it was just something I didn't feel comfortable sitting through. And she was super nice about it. And she even empathized, and she explained that she was in a similar situation once too, and she had to bow out, and she was super nice, and she said, "Hey, don't worry about the paper. How about this? You go to another play. I'll even extend your date. You can write another paper, and it'll all be good." And it was like I was able to do what I felt like pleased God and still get a good grade. And like it worked out. And a lot of times, if you answer well and you're respectful, a lot of times it all works out if you're bold enough to do that. Not always. But a lot of times it does. I say not always because another scenario happens with these same friends of Daniel's in chapter 3. So turn to chapter 3 with me, another little short story. These three friends of Daniel's, which their names were changed for them to fit the culture, their names were changed to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Daniel must not have been around, but it was another awkward time when this king Nebuchadnezzar had conquered a lot of nations and a lot of countries, and all these people were living together. So you had it was like a melting pot, and it was awkward culturally. And he was trying to get everyone unified and on the same page. So he got an idea. He got an idea to build a 90-foot tall, 9-foot wide golden statue. Like huge. Put it in a prominent place that was super easy to be seen. And he thought if he could just get everyone from all these different religions and nations to simply worship the same God, it would kind of like, it would unify them as a nation. And so he was like, he was on an objective to get his whole team together, his whole country together. And so he made it a law. He said, "Hey, when all these instruments play, it is law. We all worship this God together. We do it. And don't push back on this." He included in the law that if anyone disobeyed, huge consequences, you would be thrown in a burning furnace of fire. Like, don't break this dumb law. We're in this together. Which, as you would imagine, someone who wants to please God is a really tricky and awkward situation, including for these three guys. But it said, as in verses 7 of chapter 3, it said, "As soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and peoples of every language fell down, and they worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." It doesn't say it, but all three, but everyone but a few, select few, including these three guys. They couldn't. Not in good conscience. They couldn't do that. And King Nebuchadnezzar seeing all of this, and he's just pumped. His plan is working. Everyone's like, this is a unifying team moment. He's pumped. And all of a sudden, someone comes and whispers in his ear and says, "Hey, do you know your close servants, your friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego?" It says, they pay no attention to you. They don't even worship your gods. They're not even worshiping this gold god right now that you commanded. They don't respect you. And it says, verse 13, that furious with rage, like from Nebuchadnezzar's perspective, these three guys are some of his close servants, perhaps his friends. And he was trying to accomplish something here. And here he is being betrayed by these three guys. Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I'm sure if you were in their situation, they were probably sweating it. They were probably scared to death. They probably thought, we're going to die today. And they're probably trying to think of what they're going to say. It says, so these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar said to them, is it true? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, like that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I've set up? Now, listen, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. We'll pull them all again. I'll act like this never happened. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. Then seriously, what God will be able to rescue from my hand? Come on. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego responded in the only way they thought was appropriate. And they replied to him, they said, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve, he's able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods. And we will not worship the image of gold that you've set up. We can't do it. Says, then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace be heated up 7 times hotter than usual, and he commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. And the king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Side note, sometimes choosing to please God rather than giving into pushback is expensive. And sometimes it will cost you a lot, even if you follow these tips that we stated earlier. It doesn't always work out in a golden perfect way like it did with Daniel earlier. But if you do choose to please God, you are guaranteed to win in the end. Whether it's after your body dies or even before your body dies. And in this case, I love how this story ends, because it ends good for these guys even before their bodies die. At the end of in verse 24 of chapter 3, it says, then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't there three men that we tied up and threw into the fire? And they replied, certainly, your majesty. He says, but look, there are four men walking around the fire and unbound and unharmed. And the fourth looks like the son of the gods. And Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blaze in the furnace and shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, sons of the Most High God, come out. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps and the prefects and the governors and the royal advisors crowded around them, everyone with their jaw dropped. And they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was the hair on their heads even singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was not even smell of fire on them. And this situation, 2,600 years ago, caused this notoriously wicked King Nebuchadnezzar, who was a big opponent to God, in this moment respond in this way in verse 28. He says this. He says, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save them in this way." Then the king promoted them. I love that. That's awesome. The last tip that we can get from these guys is these guys made a really good decision. After they've done everything they could, they gave the situation over to God and entrusted it with him. And just decided, we've responded the best way we can. But they trusted God to manage the situation, knowing that either way, it will end well, even if the situation does not. Sometimes, God doesn't always promise us to rescue us like he did with these guys. But he is the only God who is able to rescue us. He is God, and he is in control, and you can trust him. I know that he doesn't always rescue us from these situations because he didn't rescue Jesus from the situation. When Jesus asked him the day before Jesus was murdered and crucified, Jesus told God he didn't really want this to happen, and he kind of asked him to help him not let it happen. And God, controlling the situation, let Jesus be crucified. And so it didn't end well for Jesus on this side of his body from dying. It didn't end well. But when you zoom out and calculate the long picture, calculate eternity, you realize that it did end well. It just didn't in the moment. That God let Jesus die because he had a plan. And if you're not a Jesus follower, here was his plan. He asked his one and only son to become a human being, and to die on the cross to pay for our sin, the sin that all of us have committed and have made us God's enemy. And it said that God loved you and I so much that he had Jesus come and die on the cross to pay for our sin, which requires death, so that anyone who simply believes in him and says yes to him, that those people won't have to pay the price of their sin and perish, but rather have eternal life. So God didn't let Jesus off the hook. God had a better game plan. And we know he wins in the end because 3 days later, God raises him from the dead. Like, and he does win in the end. He just didn't win in that very moment. But when you zoom out and you calculate eternity, you see that God and his followers are always the obvious winners. Always. James 1:12 says, "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him." That God has something special for those who choose to obey him in these moments. So whether it works out for you in that situation or not, it will work out for you in the long run. It's worth it. So prepare yourself. Be ready to give an answer. Be respectful. Trust God with the situation. Teach these things to your kids. Help them as they go and receive pushback from their friends too. Like, coach them on how to handle pushback well. And I just want to close with this. What if we changed our perspective on pushback? What if, instead of being scared of it, we started to recognize that there are some practical benefits of pushback? Like, for one, think of all the times that you wish you had the opportunity of telling your loved ones or friends about God or Jesus, but there's no convenient or easy time to do it in a non-awkward way. But think of all the times that their pushback or their teasing bring up the topic of God and set you up to hit a home run and to tell them things that you wouldn't have been able to before. I know that I get this from my neighbor. My neighbor James and I, he comes over quite a bit and sits around our fire with us, and I hang out with him quite a bit. And he's not a believer, and he can sometimes be a mocker, but I love it when he comes over. Sometimes he'll find something good and catchy on the internet about God, and he'll come over like, oh, I got Josh with this one. And they'll come over and say, Josh, what do you think about this? I read this, and I love it. Because, like, he brought the opportunity for me to tell him about God. And, like, it opens up the floodgates, and he sets me up to hit a home run with him, even if he is trying to give me pushback. Like, it's awesome. And sometimes we need to recognize that and view it as a compliment when our loved ones or our friends share their honest thoughts and feelings about our faith and use those opportunities to help them develop a curiosity about God, the God who loves them, and the God who wants them to have everlasting life in eternity, or life with him in eternity. Let your friends in these moments of pushback, let them see your example as someone who is seeking to please God and who loves him. Let's pray. God, we live in a culture that our beliefs differ so much from our neighbors, and it does create some awkward and trying situations, sometimes situations that are really tough. And I pray that just as a church community, we would become really skilled at being prepared for pushback, and especially our kids. Help us be a light for you. We say all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.